1320 AM, W248 DE, Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. There is dismay in Portland over President Trump's decision to send federal troops to what he calls a war-ravaged city, saying they are needed to protect it and ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists. KOIN-TV's Ariel Yacobazzi reports.
City, county, and religious leaders gathering in Northeast Portland within an hour's notice. They're here because they say more federal agents have been seen in the Rose City, reportedly driving through the streets of downtown Portland. Mayor Keith Wilson says this type of federal presence is not wanted.
We have no tolerance for anyone in Portland who uses this difficult moment to hurt others or our home.
The Trump administration is also planning to use Department of Justice agents to protect ICE officers across the nation after a deadly attack on an ICE facility in Dallas. CBS's Jennifer Kuiper.
Attorney General Pam Bondi, in a post on social media, says that she is sending DOJ agents to ICE facilities to safeguard federal agents, protect federal property, and immediately arrest all individuals engaged in any federal crime. Bondi also says that she is instructing the Joint Terrorism Task Forces across the country to disrupt and investigate all entities and individuals engaged in acts of domestic terrorism.
President Trump says he hopes there will be more indictments after charges were filed this week against former FBI Director James Comey. CBS's Willie James Inman with more details from the White House.
The charges against Comey come about 1 week after the president put public pressure on Bondi to go after the former FBI director, California Senator Adam Schiff, and New York Attorney General Letitia James. President Trump called the indictment justice, not revenge, and added others could be prosecuted as well.
At least three people are dead and more may be missing as emergency crews sort through damage from severe flooding in Globe, Arizona. Carl Melford is the county emergency manager.
With rains incoming, we need to closely monitor because the last thing we want is to lose a searcher.
I'm Jim Crisul in Southport, North Carolina. The building storm well east of Florida is expected to produce rough surf, strong, possibly damaging winds, very heavy rain, and a tornado threat across parts of Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia into the middle of next week. Weather forecasters do expect it to become a hurricane.
President Trump says without evidence that the FBI placed nearly 300 agents into the crowd prior to and during the deadly January 6th insurrection at the Capitol over false claims that the 2020 election was stolen. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. Farmers and ag workers are actually in one of the most dangerous industries in America, and it can even be hard on their mental health. Some statistics show the nation loses a farmer a day to suicide. Here's Eric Tegedoff.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data from 2021 to 2023 found farming, fishing, and forestry occupations had the most injuries per capita of any profession. Cynthia Curl is the director of Boise State University's Curl Agricultural Health Lab. She says there are many dangers in agricultural work that we might associate with other professions like construction, such as the use of heavy machinery.
There are also unique hazards to farm work like pesticides, livestock, different kinds of diseases for people that are working in animal production. And then there's all of those kinds of weather challenges that also face construction workers like extreme heat.
The National Education Center for Agricultural Safety leads the recognition of National Farm Safety and Health Week in September as the busy fall harvest nears. The theme this year is Safety First, Avoid the Worst. People have drowned in manure ponds of large dairy farms in the winter.
They can ice over or get covered in a little snow and not be obvious where they are. And people have driven machinery seemingly across a field, but actually into a manure pond. That's happened a couple of times in the past decade.
She also points to safety training from organizations like the Pacific Northwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center to help make the industry less dangerous for workers. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with afternoon highs around 80 degrees. We'll have a wind out of the west at about 5 to 10. For tonight, mostly clear, lows in the mid-40s. Could see some patchy fog, though, especially heading into your Sunday morning. Sunday's highs in the mid-70s.
It's 76 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll talk to one of the pioneers of artificial intelligence who's making sure folks understand the real risk of AI deepfakes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Man, you gotta love the way that intro comes in. It's busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated educators talking education. Oh, civic media people, yeah, you're out there listening in your car potentially right now. And, you know, Jacob, you gotta say, civic media is no longer just Wisconsin. Michigan, Minnesota. Civic media is like a Midwest phenomenon, man, right?
It's getting pretty exciting, Tim, because at this point, we're getting close to every state that is either an M or an upside down M that it starts with being part of the family. So we're growing. We're growing.
Nice. Nice. Love it. And so everybody out there who, yeah, this is our Saturday show. And so I know we have people right now who are driving around on Saturday somewhere up there in the Michigan, Minnesota, or the upside down M, Wisconsin. Maybe you're listening in your car, you're listening in your home, maybe you're out at, you know, one of those awesome lakes that are, you know, surrounded by, kicking back, you know, enjoying life, but listening to Busted Pencils. We appreciate you. And of course, our podcast downloaders, we always appreciate where you are and what you're doing and making this show great. But we are so excited, and we'll just say, yeah, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, yes, he will be here. You know, he's kind of right now, we're giving him a warm-up to get ready because he has so much that he wants to offer tonight.
He's
so
in the bullpen right now getting
he's
ready.
He's in the bullpen warming up, man. We had to give him some time to warm up. But we have a return guest. And, you know, we've had, Chris has been a part of Busted Pencils before Civic Media. He's always one of our first guests. Yeah, that guy, Chris Tankin, that guy who could say, hey, give me a few socioeconomic factors and don't worry about giving those standardized tests because we can predict your test scores before your kids even take it. Oh, yeah, that guy, he's back. You know, he's an outspoken scholar, thought leader, and critic of education reform, associate professor of leadership management and policy, and just an all-around great guy. He's been a principal, assistant superintendent, director of curriculum, and more. Truly, Jacob, an educated educator, wouldn't you say?
I would absolutely say so.
Yeah. But tonight, we're not going to, well, we may get into it, but well, okay, Chris, welcome. Welcome back to Busted Pencils. How are you doing, man?
Thank you, Tim. It's great to be here. It's always good to bust some pencils. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I mean, you know, we had been working on this because of sending emails back and forth, you know, through the summer. And you're like, well, I've got this and I'm over here and I'm, you know, I mean, Chris is a jet setter. Let's be honest. He's, you know, going here and going there. We finally got you lined up and we're back here. Because I was watching you on, you know, LinkedIn, different social medias and stuff, and I was noticing that you were starting to have a little bit of commentary and thoughts on the the new thing that's happening in education, that would be artificial intelligence. And I was like, I got to get Chris on to talk about this because, well, you know, Johnny's not here to make fun of me, but as he always says, Tim worships at the Church of Artificial Intelligence. In fact, though, I am now I'm learning and potentially, you know, I'm in the AI seminary, Chris, and hopefully one day we'll become, you know, a minister in the Church of AI. But Chris, AI, teaching and learning, the whole thing, though, first, let me ask you this question. Fad or here to stay?
It's here to stay. It's definitely not a fad. And I say that because Wall Street has completely adopted it, bought into it. It is in the economic structure of the country now. So it is definitely here to stay.
Okay. Tell me more about Wall Street, though, too. I mean, why, what is it about Wall Street that makes you go, okay, look, if Wall Street's in, then sorry, we just got to figure this out. Tell us more about your sense on that.
Well, corporations, corporate America isn't going to spend literally trillions of dollars investing in something that they're not going to get a big payoff from. And that's going to go away in a short time. So, I mean, you can see it with the build out of major data centers all over the country now. You can see it through companies investing in other AI companies. It's everywhere. It's everywhere, and it's making people a lot of money. So that tells me where there's money, there's power. Where there's power, there's staying power.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not that I needed to believe you, because I feel the same way. The amount of money. In fact, I was just listening to an AI podcast that I listen to, you know, because I need to constantly be given Kool-Aid to keep myself going where I'm at. But, you know, it was interesting what you say about the money. I mean, you know, people are paying attention, you know, really big, quote, money deal, NVIDIA and Oracle. Here was it this week or the end of last week, announcement of, you know, NVIDIA or Oracle and then OpenAI, of course, or, you know, like billions of dollars of cross type of investments in each other. And according to these guys that I listen to, they're like, you know, what's interesting here is that if you took all of the commitments from all three of these players, none of them actually have the money they've all actually committed to. They're kind of making this commitments based on the going like, eh, we're probably going to make that amount of money in 2 to 3 years when this deal actually goes forward. How do people think about that, Chris? I know we're not into education, but I mean, is that a cause for alarm, like a potential, like going, okay, wait a minute. This could fall apart very quickly then if these guys are truly trading and making monetary decisions with money they don't have.
Well, I think it has everything to do with education, because now you're seeing many products that are now entering the education ecosystem are all marketing themselves with AI tools. You know, AI powered, AI tools, AI equipped, AI charged. All of these things have now become marketing tools in the education landscape. So I think Wall Street and education are clearly tied. Mm-hmm. And look, many of the companies that are selling AI products to education are listed on the stock exchange.
Right.
So that's, you know, look at Microsoft, right? Look, Google has their Google Education Suite, right? And they're all backing. Apollo Education is another one that's publicly traded education company. They're all backing and pushing AI products. So there's a lot of money to be made. That doesn't mean that AI cannot be useful. Mm. In fact, it can be incredibly useful. But I just think we need to be aware that the goal here is economic, not educational, where it's economics first, education second. So as educators, we need to be aware of the economic side of things. We need to be aware of what's going on with these companies so that when we're approached with products, we can do our due diligence to make sure it fits our educational needs, not just the company's economic needs.
All right. So on that then, let's break through then and, you know, kind of admit we're in a safe space here. Chris, are you a user of AI?
Tim? I am a user of AI.
Feels better, doesn't it, to admit it?
I'm free.
You're free, man. You know, Jacob's just sitting there going like, holy crap, that is radio gold right there. Two people who came clean.
Jacob? I think it's beautiful that we can all be honest with each other. And my name is Jacob, and I'm an AI user.
All right. There we go. And for you listeners out there, yeah. Get in touch with us if you're an AI user and you've been afraid to admit it, because we'd like to have you on the show. All right. Yeah, I use it too. And I gotta, you know, I'm as concerned, but at the same time, I'm pretty inspired by what I see is possible with this. And maybe I'll take that twist that back to the kind of a thing like education reform, you know, standardized testing, measuring kids, quote, on linear accumulation of, you know, factual based knowledge and the ability to repeat that. That's kind of been the marker of saying whether or not you're, quote, educated, whether your school's winning or losing, whether your teachers are good or crappy, was all on these measures. And I'm looking at a couple of people who are saying, well, why did we ever care? And now, which, guess what? Go back and research a bunch of Busted Pencils episodes way in the past, especially with Chris, where we talked about we shouldn't have cared all those other times. But why would we ever care when, and I'm going to try to phrase this the right way, AI was perfectly designed to do incredibly well on those types of tests. And did we ever really imagine that kids scoring well on some form of memory accumulation really meant that they were learning anyway? And so now we have AI machines, AI tools, where actually the accumulation of knowledge, finding knowledge, getting access to it. Ethan Mullick, a guy who I follow a lot right now, is kind of putting out mass intelligence. It's there. It's free. Everything's potentially changed if we're talking about teaching and learning, Chris. Does that make sense?
It does. I think this is a game changer. And I think I remember the first time I used it back in November 2022 when it first came out. And I threw some prompts in there, and I immediately called my oldest daughter, who's a junior in high school, and I said, "Do you and your friends know about this tool?" And she said, "No, not yet." I said, "Oh, you will." But as soon as I used it, I saw that there's potential here to get us to where we always wanted to be, mm-hmm. in terms of active learning, actually applying knowledge to do something meaningful with it. And I think that's what AI gives. Like you said, it's kind of like this massive accessibility to knowledge. So now we can take it and use it.
Yeah, we can. Our guest, Dr. Christopher Tankin. Yes, we are talking AI, education reform too. You know, got a lot going on. And as we now have come clean, we all have admitted here, Jacob, Chris, and myself, we are AI users, and we now feel free, and we invite all of you to come back and admit that you too are one. Busted Pencils, more when we get back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Michigan's Supreme Court will hear a challenge against the Line 5 pipeline, the same oil pipeline Canadian oil giant Enbridge is pushing to reroute across northern Wisconsin. Opponents argue the Michigan Public Service Commission broke state laws when it approved the company's plan to drill an oil tunnel under the Straits of Mackinac. A new report from the Alliance for the Great Lakes and Clean Wisconsin shows nitrate pollution is taking a toll in our state. Thousands of families are paying higher costs to access safe drinking water and facing serious health risks because of nitrate pollution from fertilizer and manure. In 2022, farmers likely applied 16 million pounds of excess fertilizer beyond what crops needed. Right now on the Defender podcast, what do data centers mean for our water, land, energy bills, and why is it so hard to find out? An in-depth conversation on the secrets of data centers. Listen at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local civic media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free civic media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
Transform your bathroom with the beautiful quality of Bath Planet. Bath Planet has earned the Good Housekeeping Seal, a symbol of quality and consumer confidence for over 100 years. And right now, for a limited time, you can upgrade your bathroom for 50% off installation or choose 18 months with no interest and no payments. But you need to call now. This special offer is only available by calling 800-329-4115. That's 800-329-4115. Call 800-329-4115 right now before the offer ends.
A small conversation can make a big difference. Asking someone if they're okay is important. And during the Suicide Prevention Month, check in. And remember, 988 is always open. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We're back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators. Talking education, well, talking AI education. Yeah, we've all come clean. Jacob, our guest, Dr. Chris Tankin, me, we are AI users, and we feel the freedom that comes with admitting to the world that's who we really are. Chris, so, I mean, you know, during the break, you brought up somebody. I know you've done a ton of work with John Dewey. I mean, I know this has been some of the things you're talking about. What do you think John Dewey would say at this moment with AI in front of us? What would he be telling us? John Dewey, the father of, what would you say, Chris, the father of progressive education in America?
Well, yeah,
maybe
Francis
too much.
Francis Parker yeah, is the father. But so I think John Dewey brought it to the mainstream, brought it to the forefront. And if you're asking me what would Dewey say, look, I think he would see this as a tool, as a way to free teachers and students from the chains of memorization and regurgitation and get on to the real learning that he talked about in terms of experiential learning, having students put their knowledge to use. So that, look, that doesn't mean there's no value in memorization and regurgitation, but I think we've certainly gone way too far with kind of like this knowledge acquisition, knowledge storage mode of education. So now we have the knowledge at our fingertips. Now it's about teaching students when you have massive knowledge at your fingertips, how do you approach that knowledge so that you can use it in an effective way? I think that's really where we want to go. And that brings us right into problem-based education.
Yeah. Thinking about that, it's just like, okay, this is exciting. And again, kind of going back to what I was pointing out that, you know, so AI can perfectly perform super well on knowledge acquisition. And because, and guess what? It has it all. It's got it there. And that in one way, what we were doing for, as you point out, you know, 150 years is we've been kind of saying that evidence of students accumulating and then regurgitating back the accumulation of that knowledge equals learning. But then when you talk to people, they're like, well, but what's really important is creating, you know, critically functioning, well-informed citizens who know how to make sense of the problems in the world. And we're not sure exactly if kids can do that, but in the meantime, we're going to say that because they could remember 45 out of 50 facts, we think that they're ready.
Right. Exactly. Whether they can actually use that knowledge to solve the problems we have, that's not really important in the current education policy environment.
Right. And so, you know, you're putting that out there. Okay, so look, you know, it's behind the, you know, you can now finally see the sausage. You can look behind the curtain. You can see who the wizard really is. Guess what? Factual regurgitation is no indicator of learning, of application, of critical thought, of, you know, functioning in a diverse society with complex cultural problems, environmental issues, scientific things. That was us doing the best we could at the time, assuming that, hey, if you know a lot, you must know how to do something with knowing a lot.
Right. Yes. Look, the memorization regurgitation was never effective. It's only effective in policymakers' minds because it's easy to measure. But in the real world, right, we actually have to accomplish things. So that's where I think the hands-on use of knowledge, that's where these tools come in, because we can spend less time mm-hmm. on memorization, regurgitation, and more time on application, creation, and innovation. And that's really where we need to go. That's where the world has gone. The economic world is there, okay? If we want to really prepare students for the future, we need to move in that direction.
Well, so thinking about that, right, you made this, you know, problem-based learning. People are always talking about that. You know, it's real life. Let's give kids real life experiences. And, you know, that's, guess what? And I've seen really great educators pull that off with so much effort. And then, you know, sadly, sometimes a lot of so much kind of, you know, derision from colleagues or the society of going, what are you doing spending so much time with these, you know, these students doing this stuff? I mean, they're not learning to read the right way. They're not learning to do math. And here, though, Chris, it's like I also see like AI allowing teachers, giving them the power to create truly problem-based types of situational learning like they never could before in the past.
And the AI is an outstanding efficiency tool. And I think it supercharges teacher planning and instruction.
Absolutely. Man. Oh, okay. And if you're still out there thinking, I don't know if I really want to come clean, it's Busted Pencils. It's your time. You are an AI user. We want to know it. Well, we are here too. More with Dr. Chris Tankin when we get back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
CBS News Brief. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson is warning residents not to take the bait as President Trump sends federal troops to what he calls a war-ravaged city to protect it and ICE facilities under siege.
We've been hearing rumors about a deployment. Today, those rumors became a reality.
At least three people are dead and more may be missing as emergency crews comb through debris from severe floods that roared through parts of Arizona. This man is in Phoenix and worried about what comes next.
We have a mess to clean up, but we survived it. And we'll see what tonight brings. Supposed to be another storm coming.
A tropical depression is expected to get stronger and menace parts of South Carolina. Governor Henry McMaster has declared an emergency.
A lot of rain, strong winds, and serious flooding is going to happen, and it could happen way up in the Midlands. We don't know where it's going to go.
CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
The Packers head to Dallas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers take on the Dallas Cowboys tomorrow night on Sunday Night Football. Kickoff at 7:20 p.m. Green Bay with players missing from their offensive line. Tackle Zach Tom and his backup Anthony Belton ruled out for the game. Left guard Aaron Banks listed as doubtful with an ankle injury. Baseball, the Brewers still looking to clinch home field advantage in the playoffs when they host the Reds again tonight. The crew losing to Cincinnati 3-1 on plays like in the sixth inning when the Reds' Eli De La Cruz hit a grounder into second, the ball hitting the bag and bouncing away.
That's some tough luck with a double play ball turns into a first and third instead of two outs. It turns into a first and third. They may not score that other run, so it would have changed the game maybe, but that's part of baseball. You know, you can't rely on luck to win or lose, so credit to the Reds. They're playing great. They haven't won too many games here in the last number of years, and they've done a good job of getting their team prepared. They're hoping they get in the postseason.
As Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabo. Not sure if you guys remember, I broke that whole Tom Holland getting a mild concussion story last week, even though it might not seem all that important given what's happening in the world. In the spirit of real journalism, here's a follow-up on his condition. The 29-year-old is just fine and has been released from the hospital. Sony and Marvel are taking precautions and keeping Holland away from the set for a week to fully recuperate. The studios say this will not delay the release of the film. I can't imagine missing a week of grade school because I bumped my head on the swings. Here is a drama thriller to put on your radar. A House of Dynamite is still 2 weeks away from theaters, but generating a lot of buzz. The plot? A missile is launched at the United States, and there is a race to find out who is behind it and what the response should be. The film's directed by Kathryn Bigelow, who oversees a hotshot cast, including Rebecca Ferguson and Idris Elba. The film will be available to stream October 24th after a brief, limited theatrical run. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabo, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but
with your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today with afternoon highs around 80 degrees. We'll have a wind out of the west at about 5 to 10. For tonight, mostly clear. Lows in the mid-40s. Could see some patchy fog, though, especially heading into your Sunday morning. Sunday's highs in the mid-70s.
It's 76 at our studios.
Hi, my name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm also the author of a new book, Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. This summer proved to all of us that climate change is real and it is deadly. And I'm here to tell you that a small group of billionaires are making it worse. Did you know that billionaire Jeff Bezos' wife, Lauren Sanchez, emitted more carbon in her 11-minute Blue Origin space flight than the average person emits in a lifetime? Did you know that the average super yacht produces as much carbon emissions as 1,500 regular vehicles? And that private jets emit 10 to 20 times more pollutants per passenger than commercial airplanes? So who should pay for climate change? People like you who recycle and turn off the lights when you leave the room, or billionaires who take joyrides in space? Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will get a recap of all the weekend news with Civic Media News Director Shally Pittman. And we're going to talk about PFAS in Wisconsin Ducks with David Drake. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Oh, it's the headbanging time. It's Busted Pencils, fully lighted education talk. Educated educators talking education with, Dr. Chris Tankin and Jacob and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. We got him back. Chris, though, so a lot of what we've done the first two halves is kind of, I guess, potentially maybe even pushed kind of our view that everything's awesome. AI is going to be the best thing in the world. That is not to say that we're not aware of. And in fact, there's a lot to be cautious about in this moment. And you have some pretty good like principles of if we're going to use AI, what should we be thinking about?
Right. I don't want the listeners to think that they've entered an AI revival meeting here. You know, there are certainly a lot of promises. Okay. Mm-hmm. But there are also some perils. So, you know, when I work with teachers and leadership teams on integrating AI effectively and ethically and professionally into the curriculum, there's a few principles that I give them. You know, number one, view AI as a personal assistant, a support, not a replacement. So you use it as a support, as a personal assistant, but it should never replace you. Number two, anything that comes out of AI, anything that is created by AI, you always need to critique, revise, and customize it before using it with children. You never want to let the AI come between you and the student. So it shouldn't be teaching for you, actively teaching for you. You really need to look at if you do use it for grading, the way that you use it, because you got to keep in mind, AI doesn't know your students. It may give quote unquote correct feedback, but that might not be the feedback that student needs at that moment. It can't give targeted feedback like an education professional. And the final thing is, as I've said publicly before, these things are privacy dumpster fires. We really need to be careful about the information that you put in there. So as I tell educators, never put anything identifiable about yourself or your students. And I'm talking, you know, birth dates, names, ages, keep it all very anonymous.
Hmm. Johnny, you're like, okay, man, thank God I'm here to break up this revival.
No, I'm coming in late, but, you know, always honored to be part of the process of, you know, witnessing this, listening to it with our listeners and being part of the conversation. It's great. You know, Chris, just a follow up. I know I'm late to always the AI stuff, but it's been like Tim and I have been kicking it back and forth. It's been such a powerful tool in a lot of educational contexts. And part of discussions teachers are having, and I think they've been really great discussions, like how are we and are we going to be engaging with this tool? And I like those principles you just laid out for us, right? It's, I think, a really good guideposts to make sure we're considering as, you know, we're moving fast with this stuff, but not without thought. And Chris, I until just recently had never thought of the privacy thing. That might have been my own blinders, but recently, you know, I've been reading statements that like publishers or different people have been putting together and, you know, requesting, and part of my job, I do a lot of reviewing articles, and, you know, that's a lot of like reading what people are proposing and kind of they're sharing their research with some trust that like it's in the care of reviewers. And, you know, I recently read a post saying like, please don't use AI. Please don't put these manuscripts into AI. And I've been in some workshops about, you know, grading papers and like, can AI help, you know, writing instructors be better graders or give better feedback? And I think this privacy issue is key, like thinking about like, if you do utilize these tools, how do you utilize them with care and knowledge of this? So that's my long-winded way. Chris, could you elaborate on that privacy piece a little bit more for listeners out there who are like, wait a minute, what if I'm engaging in like maybe student writing going in there, or why be careful about that privacy thing?
Sure. I'm going to give you an example that just occurred in August. Some of your listeners may be even aware of this. So, thousands of chats from ChatGPT users ended up locatable in Google searches. I think it was in August. So now consider the teacher who puts in students' IEPs into ChatGPT and good-hearted, looking for suggestions. What are some great ways that I can work with this student? But now the IEP ends up in a Google search. So that's the kind of thing I tell teachers: if you don't know where the data is going, then it's not private, and we don't know where the data are going. So nothing is private. So just never use student names, never anything identifiers, anything like that. Even in our own personal lives, everything's got to be anonymous, because if you don't know where it's going, that means it's probably searchable and public.
And what a great example too, because what a thoughtful way that can help, like a teacher who's maybe, you know, reading an IEP, that's an individualized educational plan, you know, so the learner has some accommodations necessary. Teacher's reading this, totally like Chris just pointed out, right? Like a good-hearted approach. What can I do differently to help this young person learn fractions? Right. And AI can probably give you some ideas. And like you said, too, like, don't take it as like we can play on that word of like this being a revival meeting. Don't take it as gospel, you know, get some suggestions and kind of talk with others about it and think through it. But it can help out a lot with those things. So great tip too, like engage with these tools, but with knowledge of how important it is to maintain that confidentiality of that student's identity and their individualized education plan and things like that. Maybe it's like a behavior plan or any of those kinds of things.
But think about that, though, too, Chris. I mean, what I think you're saying, though, too, is there is power in the AI to be incredibly helpful with, quote, an IEP. However, as a professional educator, that means you have responsibilities to protect the identity of that student. But you can, quote, create kind of like a mock IEP minus identifiers that then you could throw in and say, help me out, AI.
Sure. And AI has the capability to break down learning barriers for students in ways that we didn't have access to, or it took too long. Now it doesn't take any time at all. But you, as the educator, you still have to have a professional knowledge base. You still need to know the questions to ask and why you're asking them. So I think, again, there's a lot of promise, but you have to be aware of the perils. The other thing that I tell teachers is if your district does not have a clear policy on AI use with students, do not use it with students. That's a district responsibility to lay out the ground rules, lay out the guardrails for things that are used with students by teachers. So if your district doesn't have a policy, don't use it with students.
Well, with that one then, Chris, too, I mean, I know a lot of the work you do is with educational leaders. What are they saying as you're talking to them about that? I mean, tell us what principals and superintendents are grappling with at this moment.
Yeah. So look, everybody is grappling with what should be in a policy. I mean, a lot of places have policies, but a lot still do not have policies. And so the questions I'm getting is what should be in the policy? How do you develop a policy for a tool that is always changing? But I tell them you have to come back to principles of education that aren't going to change. Again, for example, you need to review everything that comes out of AI. That's not going to change. As a professional educator, that is your responsibility.
Well, there's that. Yeah. Wow. I mean, and so this is to understand, Johnny, before you were here, though, Jacob and Chris and we all publicly announced that we are AI users and we set ourselves free. So I don't know if you want to take this moment to also become part of the group. We're not anonymous here, though. But you know what, Chris, As we go back, though, to the potential promise, you know, one of the things that you had the opportunity to listen to the podcast with Mike Bigley, one of the superintendents in, you know, up in rural Wisconsin, where they are what we feel is doing some really kind of truly groundbreaking work with AI. What do you think?
Sure. When I listened to Mike, the first thing that came to my mind was they are using AI to go from aspirational to operational. We all have these wonderful dreams of what education can be. That's the aspirations. We got to make them operational. And I think using AI the way that his district is helps to do that. It helps to personalize the learning for students. It helps to problematize the learning for students. And it sounds as if he is really moving the district. The district is really moving in the direction of using knowledge, applying knowledge creatively and innovatively.
Yeah, and I know that that's kind of, and Johnny, you got to, and we didn't share this one. Johnny, you got to interview one of the other superintendents up there.
Oh, Johnny. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. I did, man. We had a great conversation about the awesome things happening and, you know, very similar. It resonates with this conversation of like, you know, educational leaders, school teachers, you know, even parents involved in that, and including students, how they're experiencing. We are all engaging in like, what is this powerful tool? How is it helping make education better? And what are some of the limitations and pitfalls? And how do we navigate that? It's been been a good ongoing conversation.
I think Chris,
go ahead, Chris.
But I think to Johnny's point, you know, how do we navigate it? I think we can use the Kim principle, and that's keep kids in mind when you are deploying a tool like that. If we always keep the student at the center of our thinking, better things will happen.
I couldn't agree with that more, man. The best technology is the technology that helps kids stay engaged, right? Help, like, it's in their hands, it's in their engagement, you know. You can hand me a bunch of more technology and I'm not going to be necessarily a more effective teacher. But when the kids are learning and they're engaged in it and together we're doing that, you know, great things can happen.
And yeah, and that engagement piece, I know, man, holy crap, Chris, we're almost out of time with you. Chris, we also, though, have you seen the coming out of what the Alpha School, the 2-hour learning phenomena? And you know, we actually interviewed the what we would call a principal, but the head of their high school in Austin. And really, because I think that they are, whatever it is with private and it costs a lot of money, but they are taking on the engagement aspect that has been a real problem in education.
Sure. And Tim, I think part of that, you know, I don't know enough. I haven't been to that school. And I'd also like to see things 5 and 10 years from now. But, you know, a big advantage they have is they're not under state standards and state testing. They're not trapped under the 1895 paradigm.
Oh, man. Nice bringing that back, Chris, like that and going, okay, please, public school leaders, actually not even leaders, policymakers, set us free so we can do some darn good work. Chris, as always, man, thanks for busting pencils with us.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem. When we get back, Tim and Johnny and Jacob, we're going to break it down.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Maine voters decide November 4th whether adding more ID and mail-in voting restrictions for most voters justifies preventing almost non-existent voter fraud. Question 1 tightens voter ID requirements and adds hurdles for mail-in voters, including the elderly and disabled, despite only 2 voter fraud convictions since 1982. About half of Maine's over 842,000 2024 voters used a mail-in ballot, and over 16,000 subscribed to an ongoing absentee voter list, according to the state's September 2025 figures. If approved, Question 1 would eliminate the absentee list and prohibit requesting an absentee application by phone. It also prohibits third parties from delivering absentee ballot applications, including family members, and limits drop boxes. Maine's population is the oldest in the U.S., with 21.8% of residents over 65. Question 1 also narrows Maine's voter ID options, eliminating student IDs, tribal IDs, and other currently acceptable documents, despite no evidence of abuse. At almost 75%, Maine consistently has one of the highest voter turnouts in the country, and the Heritage Foundation's own figures show just 2 convictions for voter fraud in over 40 years. We have the text of Question 1 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I pushed through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Ooh. We're back. Hey. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators, talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the boards, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. And what a great guest. Love having Chris on. Always bringing us, you know, something to think about. You know, he, again, has, you know, out there working with education leaders, doing all that work and just being able to, you know, to comment, to see the promise of AI as a really powerful moment that could really reshape how we're doing education, but then also making sure to remind us of the perils, the potential pitfalls. But Johnny, more importantly, the professional responsibility that comes with, you know, the work we do as educators, we got to always be thinking about these things. And that's what I liked about what Chris was saying is like, hey, this is a great, okay, use the word tool, a great learning device, but your principles, your responsibilities, your professionalism, you got to keep that in front and center. I mean, that's what I heard him saying. Johnny.
Yeah, and I love that because I love that aspect of it because it's actually really important in anything in life, especially when we talk about being an educator or being a citizen in a democracy. You know, there's some responsibilities that come with that, and there's ethical dimensions, and really every action has a consequence. So knowing what those potential consequences are is informed decision making, and this is no different. It's just that technology moves so fast.
I know.
And actually in this context, it speeds up the work. So It gets kind of exciting as a tool. I'm like, man, wow. Like, this is really helpful. Like, this is a pretty powerful tool. And I love the times where educators talk with other educators about, okay, so it's potential or all these things. How does that play out? And what are the principles, right? Not the PAL kind, not the principals who are like helping come up with these, you know, policies in their districts, but the principles, right? The PLES version of the word, you know, what are those sort of guiding rules of thumb? I guess that's not the best metaphor to use all the time because of the history of what that phrase actually stands for. That could be another trivia sometime down the line on it, maybe a producer's choice. But the whole idea being like, hey, what's good about this? What do we want to keep and put to use? And what are some of the, you know, do's and don'ts? What's the better watch out about that. So that's going to emerge from these kinds of conversation, from research around how do we use AI in teachers talking with other teachers and school leaders talking with other school leaders and their teachers and students and parents, like a good old fashioned democratic discussion, kind of like a town hall, a town hall meeting per se, about how are we using AI? How is it using us? And where do we kind of fit in between those things?
But you gave a really great kind of lead into that of you know, an inspired, enthusiastic, seeing the potential, working with AI, you know, a teacher, and just, you know, really going, wow, this is great. And then kind of where Chris was going and going, oh my God, if I'm going to take this IEP and I'm going to throw it in, because man, it could give me amazing feedback and ideas. And again, fully from the standpoint of saying, wanting to do best by the student, but then going like, whoa, hold on, you know, take a moment. And that's where, boy, I mean, Chris bringing that up and then the way you talked about it, it's just like, you know, like anybody, like get so excited because of the good you're doing.
Yeah, it moves fast.
And then the fast, but then the potential of going like, oh, wait, crap, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And then I also really like how he talked about if there's not a policy in your school or school district, don't use it. And so that, well, I like being in that position, being like, well, then we have to voice, hey, we need a policy so that we can engage with this tool because, you know, get with the times. It's in every student's, you know, technologies. Right. It's in our classroom. But we need some collective responsibility around how we use it. So getting those policies in place. Again, technology moves fast. It's part of our responsibility to figure out those ethical dimensions and sort of fair use principles. So love that you know, shout out that Chris gave us too on that. Like, hey, remember, use it, but use it with permission.
John, speaking of moving fast, man, I got to see you on the ice, man, because from what I understand, Johnny Lupinacci is like quicksilver on the ice. But enough of that. Now it's time for your moment of zen. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember to grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website. And don't be late for our homeroom on Monday. And make sure you catch next week's class in session on Wednesday. And find us on Friday for, of course, producer Jacob's Choice special shows. And just like today, you can catch Busted Pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.
is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. President Trump sends federal troops to Portland, where the mayor insists that they are not needed and says Mr. Trump is trying to create conflict to fit his narrative. CBS's Willie James Inman at the White House.
The president said the deployment would seek to handle, quote, domestic terrorists, and that it was needed to protect immigration and customs enforcement facilities and what he described as war-ravaged Portland. In his post on social media, Mr. Trump said he was authorizing, quote, full force if necessary.
Democratic Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley says,
Trump is sending troops to Portland with the goal of, quote, doing a number on the city. And we know what this means. He wants to stoke fear and chaos and trigger violent interactions and riots to justify expanded authoritarian control.
President Trump is asking the Supreme Court for the second time this year to allow him to restrict birthright citizenship. Loyola Law Professor